Thank you, Your Honor, and may it please the Court. And good morning to Ms. Sussman. Thank you for inviting us to argue this case this morning. I'd like to reserve a minute for my rebuttal at the beginning. Your Honors, after over 5 hours of considering their jury instructions, the jury sent this note back to the Court saying, help us. Help us understand the continuum for reasonable doubt, possible doubt.
Counsel, can I just, since we don't have a whole lot of time here, help me with this. As I understand it, trial counsel for your client specifically asked the Court not to respond to the note, while there was deliberation among counsel and the Court, and without further prompting of the Court, the jury came in without further instruction. Notwithstanding the fact that there was this inquiry, there was simply no response. And had there been a response, it would have been the very one that occurred, which was there was no communication, as I understand it, as requested by counsel for the defendant. How in was your client harmed in this way?
Your Honor, I was trial counsel.
Oh, you were? Okay, so you know.
And I take great exception to the government's characterization of what happened. It's covered within pages.
What's your view of it? What do you tell us what you think happened? I mean, you were there, so tell us.
I was there. For the jury's note was read to the parties,
right.
And for pages between record 111 through 216, the parties are on the record discussing how the question could be responded to. We affirmatively asserted Mr. Adams' right to be tried beyond a reasonable doubt. We asked the Court to respond explicitly. We didn't...
To respond? How? To say what?
Please refer the jury back to the Court's instructions.
Okay, so...
That's my question about harm, because... I did understand the record slightly differently than Judge Smith, but I understood the position at trial to have been repeat the same instruction that was given before. In view of the fact that the same instruction was given the first time, I have difficulty seeing how saying the exact same words a second time or not can rise to the level of harm that would be an abuse of discretion or prejudice or whatever standard we want to describe.
Thank you. It was crucial in this case. In help us understand the continuum for reasonable doubt and possible doubt, one critical word is missing, beyond. Beyond a reasonable doubt is that core constitutional standard that the Court...
Right, but I think when jurors ask a question, they know what beyond means. They don't know what reasonable doubt means. So I'm looking at ER 213 where you say, look, we ask it to be reread identically. And I guess that's my difficulty. I just have difficulty seeing why an exact repetition of the same thing the jury has exactly been told is required.
The Court had wide latitude in how it wished to respond to this jury's question. The Court wasn't required to read the jury instruction back. In fact, the Court never told us how it would answer the question when the jury came back in.
So why didn't you object? Is it true that when the jury came in, they said, well, we have a verdict? I don't know whether they did it in writing, that is to say, by note to the judge saying, we have arrived at a verdict, or whether it was simply an oral communication. At that point, you knew that the question had not been answered the way you thought it should be answered, which is go back and you have this instruction. So then the question is, all right, did you say to the judge, well, Your Honor, I think that you ought not to take the verdict, and you should remind the jurors in response to the question that they have to consider all the instructions. Did you say that to the judge?
No, Your Honor. We had made our request for a response to the jury a matter of record.
Yes, but you did so. Let me just make sure I understand the timeline, because I think timing is everything. You did so when the note came in which said, we have this confusion. What does all of this mean? Okay, and so you had this discussion. You stated what your position was. Fine. Okay. Then the next event that happened in this continuum was that you were advised that a verdict had been reached. Now, my question is, given the fact that you knew at that point that the jury hadn't been admonished as to a second time as to what's meant beyond a reasonable doubt and so forth, did you raise an objection?
No, Your Honor. And we
so that how does the trial judge, I am a trial judge, yes, how does the trial judge know that this isn't perfectly satisfactory to you at this point? How does he know? Because he hasn't said anything to that jury, right? He hasn't given an improper instruction. Arguably, he gave the circuit instruction, the model circuit instruction. All he knows is up to then, he had done what he thought the law required, and there wasn't an objection at that point advising him that you shouldn't take the verdict until you've straightened out this confusion in the juror's mind, assuming there was some confusion. And that's another argument. How would he know that if you don't object?
We've stated that we've made our request for a response a matter of record, and this court has invariably found.
Okay, I understand that. I understand that position. Let me ask you a different question. In the normal, if that could be the right word, model jury instructions that we give, there is a jury instruction which is model 7.6 of the Ninth Circuit. And that instruction says that if you send out a question, I will consult with the lawyers before answering it, which may take some time. You may continue your deliberations while waiting for an answer to any question. I don't think that was given in this case.
I don't believe
But it is a state of the law, isn't it, of the Ninth Circuit, that a jurors can, even though they sent out a question, that they then can come in with a verdict, even if that question isn't responded to. Isn't that the law?
It may be that this jury didn't know that. And I think...
But they did it. They may not have known it. They may not have known it. That is, they weren't told this model instruction. I understand that. But they did it, even uninstructed.
Your Honor, if this was a situation where the jury sent back a note to the judge saying we're deadlocked, and then the next thing that happens is before the judge can read the Allen charge, the jury says, never mind, we've reached a verdict.
Yeah.
I think there we wouldn't necessarily have error, even though this court's
You would think what? Sorry, you would think what?
I don't think there would be error in that situation, but this goes to reasonable doubt. And if I could make one point that sticks this morning, is that their continuum is between reasonable doubt and possible doubt. And that continuum, every place on
the instruction itself goes to that issue, doesn't it? As a matter of fact, that's exactly what your position was. Your position is, hey, just reread the instruction.
With the word beyond in it, which is not contained.
Well, not reread.
Formulation.
Well, but the communication is not an instruction. It's the instruction which is an instruction.
This jury needed to be reminded that the standard was beyond a reasonable doubt. I think that's just critical in this case. They had picked a foreman the night before. That's on page 187 of the record. And so for hours, this jury was struggling. The judge said himself, this jury wanted more information, more facts. They said, help us. They never received help. We didn't waive our opportunity to respond to this. We talked about it at great length. And the judge treated we have a verdict as a final bell. But this court has never said, and it would be a bad rule to say, well, judges don't have to respond to critical legal questions.
Oh, I don't know. I'm not sure it's a bad rule, but I mean, we can argue that. But if your position is whenever a question is propounded, then evidencing some uncertainty or some question as to the law, it is improper for the court to take a verdict without having responded to the question. If that's your position, is it?
And this court has never found any differently
than
that. But
this will be the, you'll say this is the case.
This would be the first time the court said silence was acceptable when a jury is confused about reasonable doubt.
Oh, well. Even though you would have just repeated the same instruction that was given in the first place.
That included the word beyond. Which
what about an element? Well, I mean, I understand beyond a reasonable doubt is really important. But what about an element? What if they're confused about an element? What if they're confused about credibility of a witness? What if they're confused about direct and circumstantial evidence? Which, in my view, every juror is, because half the judges are. So I just wonder, is there something beyond a reasonable doubt? Now that's something we better straighten out. But elements of the offense, I'm not so sure that's so important. I mean, where do we draw this line?
It's not my rule, Your Honor.
No, I understand.
This circuit has been very clear that when a critical legal issue is raised, the jury's owed a response. The judge should clear away with concrete accuracy jury confusion. That's evidenced by this note in two different handwritings after hours of deliberation. That's
every
what we
note,
had.
Though, every note I have received from a juror in 13 years has indicated some state of confusion. But it's more often than not that you get a verdict which in some manner has resolved the confusion. You want the jurors to resolve the confusion if you've given them the tools, don't you? And it's your argument in response to what Judge Smith asked and Judge Graber, they suggest that the very response you wanted to be given had actually been given at the outset of the jury deliberations.
I believe the case law, it would be clear that even if the jury instruction or reasonable doubt was perfectly done by the court at the beginning, if you know that a jury's confused and they say, help us, they're owed a response. Correct instructions at the beginning don't solve it at the end. And both as this court's due process authority, but also as its supervisory authority about how district court judges should resolve these things, I think that saying that silence is acceptable is dangerous to say, well, if we wait a while, maybe they'll come back with a verdict. It's a very slippery slope.
Ms. Clark, with respect, I am really confused by how you feel there's a harm here, because had there been a jury instruction to which you objected in the first place, I would understand your point. But I'm looking at what the judge said to the jury. I don't know what the ER record is, but it's page 351, and on, I guess this is, never mind, it's page 867 of the ID. The judge said the burden is always upon the prosecution to prove guilt beyond a reasonable doubt. This burden never shifts to a defendant. For the law never imposes upon a defendant in a criminal case the burden or duty of calling any witness or producing any evidence. Now, the beyond a reasonable doubt is the very point you're making. To say it again doesn't really change the fact that you're not claiming that the original instruction was wrong.
I'm not
a model instruction.
I'm not.
So under the circumstances, as I understand your colloquy with Judge Breyer, you're in effect asking, not in effect, you are asking us to create a new rule that says that if there is an inquiry from a jury, even if the jury resolves its own question before the court does anything, that you must, I guess you're making a constitutional argument, some kind of due process argument, that the judge must respond, even though that may muddy the waters further.
And even in the absence of counsel cautioning the judge not to take the verdict before having responded. So even in that case, which I think is probably the extreme, but I think is the case here, even in that case, it's important.
This is not a new rule I'm asking for, Your Honors. This Bolenbach is very clear. It's a United States Supreme Court case that I cite to, in which Judge Frankfurter talks about the frayed nerves of jurors after hours of deliberation, that duty of the court to answer their legal questions. That this is not a new rule we're asking for. The precedents of this court, McDowell, Southwell, they're in our briefs. they all say that judges have to respond when there is a question as to law, especially on this.
Well, this is maybe what Judge Smith was focusing on earlier, because I understand that your final position before the district court was reread them the same instruction. But earlier in the colloquy, the judge had talked about, well, I don't know if I should define conjecture for them, and I've looked it up, and my inclination is to just tell them that I can't help them, that it's up to them. They should just keep deliberating, and that I can't give them any further instructions. If I do that, do you object? No, Your Honor, we don't object. So the judge had, I guess, was left with the impression that if he told them nothing, that would be okay. And, in fact, he told them nothing. He just didn't tell them that he was telling them nothing. So I guess I'm not sure ultimately what the difference is between saying to the jury, I'm not going to tell you anything, keep deliberating, and then, in fact, not telling them anything, and they keep deliberating, which was where the judge was going with this. So
we don't know what the judge was going to say.
He said what he was going to say. He said, what I'm saying is I'm inclined to bring them in here, tell them what they're really getting at here is the core questions in the case that I must leave to them. I can't give them any further instructions. If I do that, do you object? No, Your Honor, we don't object. He said what he was going to do. I'm going to tell him I can't tell him anything.
I believe we asked him to return them to their original instruction.
You did. I'm not asking this really as a matter of waiver on your part, but I'm asking, I guess, in the sense that Judge Breyer was, of how was the trial judge to know, and maybe more in the sense of prejudice, because the judge was going to tell them nothing. And, in fact, the judge did tell them nothing. So, and if he had said, I'm not telling you anything, then we'd be looking at that for an abuse of discretion. So I guess I don't see the abuse of discretion between saying nothing and saying that you're saying nothing.
I think that without having asked the jury if they instructed them to apply the reasonable doubt standard, or ask them if they had any lingering question on the reasonable doubt standard before they accepting the verdict, that would have been the better practice and would have solved our problem.
But, you know, when you start singling out instructions, you really are guiding the jury in a particular direction. It happened, and your argument is that's fine from your point of view, may have very well guided them to an acquittal. But you have to be very balanced when judges respond to questions. They have to be balanced. They can't be argumentative. They have to be what the law is. And I think what's troubling us, at least troubling me, is that the judge simply would have said, "Here are the I've given you the instructions. I have nothing to add. Please read the instructions."
I think,
and that was fine from your point of view.
That conclusion calls for some speculation about, did this jury actually apply beyond a reasonable doubt,
or did they
do what they said they were doing here?
You never know how a jury, they may have done any number of things, but we're not looking at what they may have done. The fact is, what were they told to do, and was that proper? And your argument is, yes, that was proper, and they should have been told to do it again. That's the argument.
I gather that since, I don't want to prolong this, but I gather since you did not object, you agree that the standard of review here is plain error.
No, Your Honor. We believe that this matches Sullivan versus Louisiana, which Justice Scalia wrote for the majority or for a unanimous court when he talked about when it involves reasonable doubt, it goes to the Sixth Amendment right, and it's a structural issue. That even if there was a waiver, this flaw in not answering a jury question on reasonable doubt is so great.
We're not talking about so much a waiver. We're just talking about the standard that we look at here. And since you didn't object, even though it's a constitutional point from your perspective, it's plain error, is it not?
It's structural error. If it's not structural error, it's very serious constitutional error on a harmless error standard. And it's also procedural error in this court's supervisory function over district courts to have a decision that says district court judges should answer jury questions on critical issues of law. We don't agree that it was plain error. Yeah.
Thank you, counsel.
Thank you.
We'll hear from the government.
May it please the court, counsel, Kelly Zusman appearing on behalf of the United States. The whole issue about the answer to the jury question, I think first off, the bright line rule that Mr. Adams is advocating for here is inconsistent with the abuse of discretion standard that applies to how a district court judge responds to a jury question. I think it's also inconsistent with this court's precedent that there is really no one-size-fits-all when it comes to how to properly handle a jury question.
Counsel, the thing that is a little peculiar to me, and I've not been a trial judge, so maybe it isn't peculiar, but there's a lengthy, passionate conversation going on about how to respond to a somewhat ambiguous and confusing all by itself jury question about its confusion. And then the judge says, look at that. I've just been told that the verdict is coming in, and the judge doesn't say, well, how does that fit in with what we've been doing? I mean, there's sort of no deep breath to say, we're in the midst of this very intense discussion about what I should do, and now the verdict has come in. There's no further conversation from the judge. And I understand that, yes, counsel has a duty to make any objections, but it just struck me as odd that it just sort of ended the other conversation instantly and without any apparent thought process there. What do you make of that, and is that okay?
So to answer your last question first, yes, it's okay, because, again, this is Judge Mossman's attempt to deal with a somewhat unique situation of working on responding to this jury note, which is somewhat cryptic, and at the same time, then, it's just 10 minutes later. The jury note comes in at 2:35. It's announced to the parties. They're in this discussion, and then at 2:45, just 10 minutes later, he receives word from his bailiff that, in fact, they have a verdict. So is it a little odd that he didn't take a break and say, you know, jury, you have a verdict? Really?
Not necessarily to tell that to the jury, but to, like, when he says to the counsel who were in front of him, oh, I just found out that there's a verdict, no further conversation with counsel about how to approach that. Now, it might have resulted in exactly what happened, but I guess it just surprised me to see in the transcript how it unfolded.
And I guess I can't get into the head of Judge Mossman and really answer that question. What I would tell you, though, is that immediately after taking the verdict, at defense counsel's request, the jury was polled. And every single juror individually was asked.
Well, that's standard. Do you have any reason why I don't know how it worked in your district. Were you the trial attorney?
No, I was not.
Okay. Well, do you have any reason why the model criminal jury instruction 7.6 communications with the court wasn't given?
It's not standard practice in the District of Oregon to give that instruction.
I see. Okay.
But it's your view that it's a correct statement of law, I presume?
Yes, Your Honor. So, but I think the opportunity to object and to somehow question the court's decision to accept the verdict.
I mean, and I think Judge Graber makes a good point. I mean, they're 10 minutes that elapsed between the note and between the verdict, announcement there was a verdict. So what went on in the jury room in those 10 minutes, we don't know. Right? I mean, one juror, maybe it was 11-1 or 10-2 or some other number, but whatever it was, the people probably in the minority, unless there was this very odd situation, probably in the minority, became convinced whatever convinced them, whether it was the evidence or their own reading of the law, that the defendant was guilty according to the instructions. So you don't want to get into a question where you start to examine what was it that pushed them over the edge. I mean, we all are talking about whether it was the reasonable doubt instruction. Could have been any number of things. Could have been anything that happened in the case.
Correct.
And somebody says, oh, well, I forgot that fact. That's what happened? That's what the witness testified to? Well, guilty. I mean, that's who knows whether that happened? We don't know.
Are you aware of any case law that really tracks the factual pattern of this particular case?
I'm not, Your Honor.
Is it not correct that the Supreme Court, and for that matter our court, have repeatedly admonished that trial judges are to be very careful about contact with jurors after they have gone out for their deliberations so as not to coerce them by appearing in the eyes of the jurors to favor one side or the other?
And I don't want to go beyond the record.
Right, no, and I'm not asking you to. I'm asking you to put this in context as to why Judge Mossman may have been reluctant, and indeed why counsel for the defense may have been reluctant for a new communication. Because is that not the pattern? We want to avoid interfering with that almost, well, it's just a very special function within our legal system. Once the jury's in there, we don't want to interfere with their deliberations unless there's a really serious reason to do so. Is that a fair statement?
I believe it is. And I spent many years working for a district court judge, and I can tell you that jury notes were one of the most stressful things that we dealt with, just for the very reasons you've identified.
What is your response to counsel's position that a question concerning reasonable doubt goes to the core, to the heart of any criminal case, and therefore, because it is so special and so important, you have to respond to that question before taking a verdict. You have to, however you're going to clear up the confusion, whether you're going to simply say it's in the record, or say you've already been given the instruction, refer to whatever is 3.2 or whatever the number is, or refer to a particular instruction or a series of instructions. It's so central that if you simply leave the situation as it was, demonstrating the ambiguity that existed, that's error. What's your response to that?
My response is that the rule that's proposed simply brushes too broadly. That any time the words reasonable doubt appear in a jury note, that then
counsel will say, that's fine for this case, and by the way, that's her whole point. She said, I'm not asking for elements or this or that or direct or circumstantial evidence. I'm saying it's reasonable doubt. It's so important. It's so crucial. And therefore, you can't leave it unanswered. What's your response to that? That this court writes an opinion which says, while the general practice of not responding to questions which were not objected to or whatever happened in this case, well, normally it's all right because they can continue their deliberations. When there is a question involving reasonable doubt core, therefore, it must be responded to before the taking of a verdict. That's the rule. That's what counsel would like. What's your response?
My response is that rule is too broad, that it tries to create a one-size-fits-all response.
On the issue of reasonable doubt.
And I think that's inappropriate. I think it's inappropriate to isolate the issue of reasonable doubt for then saying to district court judges that normally have discretion, thou shalt respond to a jury question, even if they come in with a verdict.
And in particular, you make it sound so onerous, but at least the way Judge Breyer phrases the question, the district court would still have discretion. For example, in this case, the court had a number of options. One was to define conjecture. One was to refer back to the reasonable doubt instruction. One was, as the court said, I think I'll just tell them that they're wrestling with the key issues in the case and that's their job. So it isn't really, but any of those would have been an answer, and then we would be off to the races on a normal abusive discretion review. So I guess I don't, there's a limit on discretion, but it's pretty tiny.
We've got a couple of issues here. The first is, was it an error at all? And our position is it wasn't an error.
I know that, but that's exactly what we're talking about. Was it an error not to respond when there's confusion about reasonable doubt? That's exactly the topic that we're on, and, you know, why isn't it an error?
Your question builds in the assumption that there was confusion about the definition of reasonable doubt. Let's assume that
we read the note, and we believe, looking at the note, that there's confusion. So let's start. You can argue there wasn't confusion. Fine, I understand that argument. But what's your answer to the question of, if there was confusion that was demonstrated in the note, a court then has to respond before the taking of a verdict, and failure to do so constitutes reversible error.
If the note demonstrated that the jury was confused, or, as many of the cases have addressed, wrong about the definition of reasonable doubt, then I would probably agree with Mr. Adams that, in fact, there was an obligation, if not to respond to the jury's question, at least to query the jury prior to taking the verdict.
No, so you agree with the defense. In other words, if, for example, the note can fairly be read as being confused as what's meant by beyond a reasonable doubt, then it's error not to respond to that before the taking of a verdict.
If there's confusion that leads the court to believe that the jury is on the wrong track. Now, if it's just simply confusion that is only answered by reread the instruction, no, I wouldn't go that far.
But what if they write it in, what if they say, some of us in this room are talking about, I mean, let's say, it's talking about possible doubt. Some of the jurors have actually thought that since they could have a doubt, therefore there is a doubt, and since they have a doubt, they think that the defendant ought not to be convicted. Sends in that note, okay? Now you get that note, you say, my goodness, that's wrong. That's absolutely wrong. It's not any possible doubt. It's a reasonable doubt, a doubt based upon reason and common sense. I told the jury that. The prosecutor gets up and says, Judge, you told the jury that. Now, it's the wrong instruction. It's the right instruction, the wrong interpretation.
But Ms. Zussman,
that it ought to go back, that it's reversible error not to explain that to the jury?
I think Judge Smith may want to answer.
Just to follow up on this, it is all very interesting, but in this particular case, we really don't have that factual pattern, do we?
No.
Here we have a situation where, let's even stipulate that the jurors were confused. The reality is that there was a discussion between Judge Mossman, counsel for the defense, counsel for the government, and the ultimate conclusion before the jury note came in was that Judge Mossman was going to tell him he couldn't add anything. It's just what they had was what they got. Now, it turned out they came in with the verdict. But let's move the time period beyond. Let's assume that they had not come in and Judge Mossman either sent in a note or called them in and said, I can't tell you anything further. What you got is what you got. What's changed here other than a few minutes of time? They really don't have anything more. Counsel for the defense has agreed that that's an appropriate resolution. To me, this is all fantasy to some degree because we are creating a situation that simply didn't exist here. The judge said, I'm not going to do anything more. Counsel for the defense said, I agree with that. So they would have had something later that they already had. They made up their minds in the province of the jury. They came in, they had a verdict, they were polled, no problem. I assume the government probably agrees with this, but how is there anything in this case other than the way I've described it to just now?
I think you've covered the bases. I'm out of time. Are there any questions about the prosecutor's rebuttal closing or the sentencing? Unless there are further questions on the note issue, I would submit.
I think we're okay with understanding the other issues on the briefing. Thank you.
Thank you.
We used a great deal of your time, Ms. Clark. You may have a minute for rebuttal.
I appreciate that.
because I was there, I need to clarify and point out to the court there is no time on this jury note. And so we don't know how long it was between when the jury gave the judge its question and when.
So it could have been longer than 10 minutes.
The judge could have had another trial on his bench. The parties could have been at offices and had to be assembled. So 10 minutes wouldn't be because we just don't know from this record how long it was.
Does it matter?
We don't have that issue before the record, but the timing.
But it doesn't matter, does it? I mean, an hour, 2 hours, 3 hours, 4 hours. The reality is you agreed with what Judge Mossman was going to do. The jury, without any contact of anybody and with the original jury instructions before it, made a decision.
The judge didn't do what we asked. And I should add that polling didn't fix this. We're not here to upbraid Judge Mossman. Things happen during trials. Mm-hmm. And this was a reasonable doubt question, and it needed to be answered. And it wasn't, and that goes to the Sixth Amendment, not to upbraiding trial judges, but to Mr. Adams' core constitutional right to be tried beyond a reasonable doubt.
Nobody here is upbraiding Judge Mossman. He's a fine judge, and we all agree with that. I think we've got your argument, though.
All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you, counsel. We appreciate the arguments of both counsel, and the case is submitted.